On this episode of DC On Screen, we say goodbye to a legend, get updates on the Suicide Squad, and by the way, it doesn't sound like the movie's all dick jokes, as well as some Wonder Woman 3 and television news, right after these messages from these graceless, homicidal bastards. Welcome into DC On Screen episode 640. On this podcast, we share our honest opinions about the DC Comics multiverse on film and television. If it has been released, it is fair game, so beware of spoilers. I am David C. Robertson, and this, the man who once shoplifted a travel-sized loving lamb inflatable love doll, but not before handing over his business card to the clerk, Jason Goss.
It's for business purposes.
It was travel size. Of course it was.
I had legitimate business.
You sure did. Before we get into the news, I would like to remind you that you can go to DCOnScreen.com to find links to our Patreon, where $5 a month gets you access to exclusive content. There's also a donate button and a link to our merch store if you would like to support us in those other ways. And as always, thank you so much for any support you can throw our way. All right, man. Man. My ribs are out. My ribs are hurting. I've for like 3 weeks now, my ribs have been killing me. So that's, if you just hear me go, whoo, suddenly.
Such a weird thing.
I know. But yeah, if you just hear me do that, just like I did just a second ago, That's what's just happened. My ribs caught me. I moved away and it went, ah.
Oh, it happens. I mean, you know, that spine of yours is not pristine. You make some old man sounds from time to time.
I do. All right, man. So I hate to open up the show on such a down note. I really do. And I'm not much for sentimental hoo-ha, but it absolutely does have to be said that Richard Donner, famously the director who made us believe a man could fly in 1978's Superman, has sadly passed away at 91. And, you know, say what you will, man. That movie really cemented the genre of the comic book movie. No doubt about it. The man took his creative license, and he definitely added several spokes to the Superman wheel. Mm-hmm. But he also nailed the source material of the time. Mm-hmm. And I've often iterated that DC would be better pushing past the creative anchors of Richard Donner, paving new ground, as Richard Donner once did. But it's undeniable that without Superman the movie, Tim Burton would have had nothing to twist into his own macabre vision. Zack Snyder would have had nothing to deconstruct. And Kevin Feige, protege of Richard Donner, wouldn't have been able to shepherd in the Marvel Cinematic Universe into the Goliath that it is today. And
he legitimized the process for sure.
Yeah, and let's be clear though. I mean, you know, without the Marvel Cinematic Universe, DC, like Warner Brothers, wouldn't be looking for all the things they're trying to get done at this point. They would just be like, "Eh, well, comic book movies don't really do that well."
Yeah, we'll do a one-off every once in a while, maybe two, whatever.
Yeah,
another 10 years will go by.
But you know, that is hardly Richard Donner's, you know, contribution to cinema. And you know the names, the Lethal Weapon franchise, Maverick, The Omen, The Goonies, Scrooged.
My favorite Lady among Hawk. All of them.
Yeah, Scrooge is great.
It's every single holiday I watch it at least once.
I know you do.
Possibly more times.
Conspiracy theory. There are so many. And then you realize that he directed television as well. I mean, he did episodes of Wanted, Dead or Alive, The Rifleman, Have Gun, Will Travel, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Gilligan's Island, Tales from the Crypt, and one of my favorites, The Twilight Zone. He directed 6 episodes of The Twilight Zone, and my favorite of those 6, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet with William Shatner.
Mm.
There's a man on the wing of the plane. Something! And even all of that is just really the tip of the iceberg. So
yeah. That is one of the most iconic. I mean, people who don't even know the title of it vaguely know that scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
Through all the parodies that have followed. It's a phenomenal episode.
But yeah, Donner had his hands in so much entertainment. I mean, all the Fox X-Men movies, there's just so much. Like, you could just go and dig around on his IMDb and just go, good Lord. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Rest in peace, Richard Donner. Like, it's one of the greats, one of the icons. All right, let's move on to the Suicide Squad. From sad real life news to James Gunn saying that the Suicide Squad is a sad and complicated story.
Nice.
As he said, it's a sad story, and he was telling this to Screen Rant while at a set visit bunch of outlets were at. But he says, one of the most fun things I like at the end of the day, even though we do kill Guardians of the Galaxy, we kill some of them, but in this movie, it really is about, you know, who's going to get killed. You start sort of knowing these are guys with Guardians. He says, you know, these guys that may have different problems, but at the end of the day, they're all really good people. That isn't the case with this. It's a much more complicated story. Some of these characters may end up being good. Some of them are definitely not good. And some of them, most of them, are somewhere in between with different shades of gray and that moral drama, that moral play, the fact that you don't know anything that's going to happen. That excites me. Because honestly, we've gotten a little bit of drama in the trailers, I feel like, but a lot of it just seemed like wacky fun. And I like the notion that, you know, we're going to get more than just jokes and weirdness.
There will be. The first one had, I'm sure many things that were very different in the actual air version, but even the theatrical version had some serious moments. Some honestly very heartbreaking moments.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, a lot of people have, you know, kind of expressed concern that this movie is not going to have a lot of actual drama, a lot of heart or anything, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think it will.
I'm getting the feeling that it will.
I think it will. I mean, look, just because there's a rave scene doesn't mean we can count all that out.
As we all know, rave scenes are a clear indicator.
Look at it as a spectrum. You have a character named Polka Dot Man who throws mm-hmm. colored shapes at people.
Mm-hmm.
That would seem to be a pretty wacky, fun dude, right?
Yeah.
Crazy and wild guy. And then he's seemingly the most depressed motherfucker in the movie so far from the trailers.
Oh, yeah. Gunn even talked about it in an interview. I didn't actually put that one down because, you know what? I'm really trying not to get too deep into who these people are before we get into we actually see the movie. It's starting to get into that spoiler territory where just saying shit now. And you're just like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah. This is definitely about the period of time before the release because we're like 5 weeks out.
Mm-hmm.
Where I start pulling back as much as I can on the little press bits, you know?
Yeah. I got about halfway into that paragraph and went, oh, whoa, whoa, you guys are.
Whoa, let me read this after. I'll read this after the fact. Let's go.
Now, a couple weeks ago, the last episode, I did wonder about Deadshot and whether or not he was the original character that they were using instead of
Bloodsport.
I can never remember that guy's name. I just kept wanting to go Idris. No.
You know, instead of Idris.
But according to Peter Safran, isn't that his name? Yeah.
It's Peter Basil. Thank you.
Yeah. Deadshot could have been. It was a character who returned He said it was certainly a discussion. But he says, we discussed it, but I think the Will Smith of it all was really more of a schedule thing than anything else. We knew we had to start shooting in September because, frankly, we knew probably earlier than most people that James was going to come back and do Guardians. So it was really important that we started shooting when we started shooting and Will wasn't available. And that kind of made it easier all around. What are you going to do? He's not available. Yep. So it's also nice to, frankly, help separate it from the first movie, I think, in a greater fashion.
Yeah, entirely. But I'll give him this. That has been the line I've heard pretty much outright from the entire company so far.
Mm-hmm.
Is, man, it was scheduling. Like, yeah, of course we want Will Smith back. Are you kidding? It's Will Smith.
Yeah.
You know why we can't have him? Because he's fucking Will Smith. He's somewhere else.
And he was asked if what kind of connection they will have to the first movie. And he says, we do not address it in any form. Yes, they're the characters, the actors that played them in the first movie. But we really wanted to make sure that this stands on its own 2 feet. So again, it's why you can't really call it, it's not a sequel. But there are characters that were in the first movie, right? So it's not really a full reboot either. So we just call it James Gunn's The Suicide Squad.
I am curious if they're going to pull this off and on some kind of level that it rewrites what you're capable of doing in that fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, you know, some people that are way better at film history than me could probably point out other versions that where this has been tried and even successfully.
Yeah.
But it will be neat to see that
every James
off.
Bond.
That loosely continues some stories, but he's always the same age, played differently.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
You know, in that sense, The Simpsons is almost that way. Yeah, there's a continuity, kind of.
Yeah, kind of.
But every episode is just kind of an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Bart's been, what, 9, 10? What is he officially? Is he officially anything? But he's been that age for, you know, the entire run, right?
Fourth or fifth grade, something like that, whatever that is. 10-year-old boy, I guess.
Precocious young chap.
Saffron was talking about how DC jumped on grabbing James Gunn from Marvel, which I guess he didn't really technically. They didn't technically grab him from Marvel.
Leased him.
Saffron said he got fired on a Friday in July, and on Tuesday, Toby came to me and said, "Tell James Gunn that whatever he wants to do at Warner Brothers, we want him for it. Just tell us what he wants to do." It was two days later. It was 2 days later, so internal discussions were incredibly easy. It just felt like James did not merit the treatment he got, and ultimately Disney felt the same way and reversed their decision. But it was immediate.
A rare case of Warner Brothers handling something correctly.
Yeah, they just like glanced at those tweets and went, "Nah, it's not that bad."
Yeah, there was a lot of that too. Like I had the same reaction. I glanced at it and was like, "That was an overreaction." Well, I saw it all at once, too. It was like, it seemed like it happened over like 12 hours. There were some tweets, and then like it seemed like the world went to sleep, and we woke up, and he was fired. And I was like, what the fuck actually just happened? And started flipping back through the rest of them. I'm like, that is not, that. I don't think that's going to hold up.
Yeah.
Like, these are shitty thoughts, but these are not real thoughts.
Yeah.
They're mostly just not funny. That was the major issue.
Yep. Last episode, we talked about James Gunn having admitted that he recently talked to people at Disney and Warner Brothers about casually talked about a Marvel DC crossover. And Charles Roven, veteran DC producer, Charles Roven, who has now worked with Gunn on the Suicide Squad, suggests that they would not rule out such an event. He says, James hasn't approached me with that, but that just goes back to the comment I made earlier. Why should we ever say never? What value does never have really?
Yeah.
I like that. I like that attitude.
Yeah. The anti-Sarnoff approach.
Right. The anti-Sarnoff approach. Otherwise known as the reasonable approach.
Otherwise known as reading the room.
Over to some Aquaman 2 news. Kind of some Aquaman 2 news. So Amber Heard just revealed the birth of her first child. It was a baby girl named Unag Paige Heard. Unag was born on April 8th via a surrogate. But Amber is listed as her sole legal parent. However, she did require the surrogate to give birth on Johnny Depp's bed and cover the baby for the maid to find. She didn't actually require to give birth in Johnny Depp's bed. I can't get over the fact that she shit in his bed and the maid found it.
It's troublesome. Not gonna lie.
Mm-hmm. It's word.
It's the kind of thing that after I know a person is capable of that, I don't know what to make of them going forward.
Oh, yeah. The whole time I'm watching Aquaman 2, it's going to be through squinted eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, you doo-dooed on a bed.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Look, suspension of disbelief is a powerful thing.
And it's not even like you didn't even like really that wasn't doing anything to Johnny Depp. That you're punishing the maid.
Nah,
she's the one that found it.
He, you know, I mean, it feels that way, but I would have had to throw away the bed.
Well, we don't exactly know what Johnny's into. It could have been an olive branch.
presumably they had discussed something along the lines of boundaries like that, and it was past it for him.
Yeah.
I mean, like our toddler you know, had one of those didn't tell us there was a poopy diaper kind of things. Got on the bed and was jumping around for a second. And then I was like, okay, cool. You can jump on the bed. Oh, wait, wait. There are brown spots being left behind. And my first thought was we just have to burn it and get a new bed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, that's where my mind goes. Initially.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's rational. Let's talk about Wonder Woman 3. Uh-huh. Charles Roven, still talking here, says, of Wonder Woman 3, says, we're starting to put something together. We're moving in a direction. It's definitely something we're going to want to realize. Now, it should be noted, he did produce Man of Steel, BVS, Justice League, Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, and Wonder Woman 1984. And he produced Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. He says, I'm only attached to anything that's spun off of Man of Steel. So once Henry Cavill is no longer a part of Superman, then I'm not attached to Superman. So that he's not going to be attached to anything that Abrams is doing with his Superman project.
Mm-hmm.
But he does say that he believes he holds on to the multiple versions. He says, if they're going to go along with a filmmaker's vision, you have to allow for multiple versions. For the multiverse, in other words, you can't have it any other way. Not everybody's going to think alike. And so I think if somebody brought them a cohesive vision, it's my understanding, and I could be wrong because I haven't read the script or whatever, but even in the Flash thing that supposedly has multiple Batmen, it does have somewhat of a cohesive vision to the universe that's been created since Ezra has been playing the Flash. So they're not saying anything, never do anything. And I like that. It's got to work. You know what I'm saying? It's got to work. You got to be able to actually say, here's what I'm really going to deliver. And then it's got to work. So I've seen people talking about how this is, you know, both evidence for them following Justice League and Zack Snyder's Justice League and The Flash. I think is evidence for both, or you could at least all in a multiverse. Everything is canon. If I'm to understand it, that's what DC is going for right now, right? Like, just, I mean, everything is
that's
canon.
That's been the hope, is that everything is canon. Because, like you know, I've discussed, I don't mind them moving on to different things so much as I mind them just abandoning things mid ship. So
yeah, I don't care for that. Hashtag restore the Snyderverse.
Yeah, I mean, even if you just left the Snyderverse where it is right now, which you know, given Zack Snyder's announcement this week, is very possibly the only thing he'll have time to do is leave it where it is. Yeah, like you may just, I don't know. You can do other things, especially given all the tools you have to make a comic book movie, especially in this universe. You have all the rights in the world to just pay respect to that. Have something going on. Pay a couple people a slightly ungodly sum to help you do it. And then you've got the patch applied. You have the Band-Aids there. Like the new limb is sewn on and the arm works, and go. What's frustrating is to see all the talk, the Sarnoffy talk about, like, well, we would never do this and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, because it would just cost so little at this point to just tie it in and give some sense of closure and let us have that. And then we can get excited about new things.
Yep.
It's frustrating time.
So here's something.
Are you saying, though, that also, given that we can use Roven slightly as a barometer for, you know, when Cavill is well and truly out?
Maybe so. I mean,
I'm not convinced he's out by any stretch.
Yeah, I'm not 100%.
I haven't been for the last 3 years.
Yeah, I'm not. By the way, Roven just said that it was like an article that dropped today. But I didn't want to get into it, all of it, but he did say that, like, he still, Warner Brothers still hasn't told him the numbers. He doesn't, like, no one knows the numbers for Zack Snyder's Justice League.
No, I mean, the way Warner Brothers did this, there's one person at some desk whose task was to gather all the numbers, delete everything after he gathered them. And then he turned around. It was like that fucking Joker scene where they're like, good job, I was told to kill the guy in front of me. And they popped in the back of the head and the fucking numbers disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they want to even know what the fucking numbers are at this point.
Yeah. Well,
that might involve some facing of reality that,
you know, if they were bad, though, we would have heard about it.
That's the other part of it. Like, if it was proof positive, like, yeah, we told you no one would care about this. we told you throwing another $90 million at this wouldn't make a difference. I'm, you know.
It's just 12 guys with sock accounts on Twitter.
Yeah.
No.
They had to create their own platform because no one would cover them. So they could. No, I mean, it's not. Oh, God. Could you imagine the press if it actually had done poorly?
Mm-hmm.
All the press that we would have heard from probably Sarnoff, frankly, at that time.
Yeah.
Of like, well, you know, we just, I know it was a big expense, but we wanted to give the fans, you know, something to really, you know, get them through. We know it cut them short and, you know, they understand at this point that, you know, it was a limited time thing. And, you know, this won't be something we can do going forward, but we were really happy to have given the fans that.
Yeah.
Like the phrase in particular, we were happy to have given the fans that is the one that I'm just like, there's an alternate universe where I'm infuriated by reading that sentence.
Yeah. So, speaking of frustration and infuriated responses,
mm-hmm. we're never short for them.
Have you heard about this thing that Kevin Smith was talking about? How he pitched a thing to Warner Brothers and they turned it down. He says, "I
no, he was, but he does that a lot." So yeah. I don't know which specific one.
He was on it was on his podcast, Fat Man Beyond, and he says, "I had that." He says, I pitched a thing, and first I pitched it at like one place, and they were like, we love this. And I was like, thanks. And they're like, we want to do this instantly. And we're going to find out like if the character is spoken for somewhere else in the company. And then they came back and said, well, it is spoken for someplace else, but they don't have plans for it. And they're very excited to hear your plans. So I was like, right on. And they were like, look, if they say, yeah, it's happening. And you hear that all the time in this business. And we pitched, and the people that we pitched to were like, it's dark. And I was like, well, I mean, you know, but it's also funny. And they're like, but it's dark. So they didn't go for it. And it died there. So rather than it, and it was for another thing that somebody else owned, but I have brought enough to it where I was like, this will totally work without their thing. And he talked about how he's turning it into a comic book, changing various elements so that it won't be related to that Warner Brothers intellectual property.
Not technically, but I feel like we'll be able to tell.
Yeah.
It's kind of like The Boys or something like that.
And then he explained that the project was The Freaking Question.
I want to know who is hoarding those rights immediately.
I want to know why they didn't think The Question should be freaking dark.
Another good, you know, question.
And he said he's been trying to do something with The Question for a while. And then he says that this time he got closer than he ever had, but that their decision, his decision to take the idea and just create something, you know, whole cloth out of it for himself was inspired by Robert Kirkman, the guy that did The Walking Dead and Invincible. Mm-hmm. He says, it got to that point where I was like, I'm fucking tired. After 20 years of trying to make The Question, just go make your own thing. You know what you know where I got that? Robert Kirkman on our own show. He talked about like working at Marvel and he was like, look, it was fun, but I bolted because I'm like, why am I giving them all my best ideas just because I love these characters so much? It's like I'm hostage to my nostalgia. All I do is cross the street, put new names on these stories, and they're mine. And I was like, that's smart, man. So that's what we did as well.
I mean, that's a beautiful thing, and they're not wrong.
No, but I'll be buying that book.
Yeah, I really will.
I'm like, that would have been The Question. It's really too bad.
I don't know when there's been a not dark question.
Right? They've all been pretty.
When is it lighthearted? I mean, the original died of lung cancer.
Right.
I mean, it gruesomely. To be taken over by, like, Renee Montoya, who's a pretty fucking a badass in her own right, but also a pretty, you know... Not shady. What's the word I want here?
Gritty?
Yeah, pretty gritty character. Yeah, yeah. Very Gotham-y character. Like,
well, yeah.
Not a ray of sunshine.
All right, that's going to do it for our movie news. Let's take a quick break, and we're going to come right back with some TV news. All right, we're back. Jason's over here whistling the DuckTales theme in the break.
It's been on my mind. Not sure what's going on with that.
Yeah, the Lord laid it on your heart. I often get that with Tailspin.
How does that go again? Not trying to earworm anyone. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That and Darkwing Duck. I get that. Get both of those stuck in my head quite a bit.
Huge chunk of our childhoods, all those.
When there's trouble, you call DW.
Yeah.
Let's get dangerous, y'all. Superman and Lois. Sophia Hasmick has been promoted to a series regular for season two. She plays the Smallville Gazette staffer, Chrissy Beppo. And by the way, I never noticed before that they named her after the frickin' super monkey. That seems weird.
Good God, that's... Beppo, yeah.
I never noticed that was her name.
That is an odd choice to assign to someone in an entirely different context than, you know, super monkey.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know that it ever registered that it was her name.
Yeah, I didn't notice it until I was reading this article and I was like, Beppo, like the super monkey? What? That's weird. And over on The Flash, they have confirmed. We did know that Grant Gustin was coming back for season 8. Now we have confirmation that Jesse L. Martin, Candace Patton, and Danielle Panabaker are all coming back for season 8, y'all.
Well, that's good.
Joe Iris and Kaitlyn Snow and Killer Frost, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have some people originally in the show there. Well, theoretically, but Legends has been fine, so whatever.
Yeah, Legends, I mean, still got Mick. Sarah.
I mean, the list ends quickly.
Yeah, and I do like what they've been doing with that, how they've sort of created a little more of a bond between Mick and Sarah over that, how they're the only two original Legends left. So I've been enjoying that. The Flash, not so much, but though Diggle was just on this last episode, and that was fantastic. So
I believe you. I'm still getting to both of them, and I'm semi-excited about it, but it's also like, you know that point where there are so many of them where it's like the first episode happens and you're like, okay, cool. Listen, I've got a second. Let me get to that. And then maybe the second or third episode happens and you're like, okay, look, there's a lot going on here. I like this show. Let's get into it. And then suddenly there are like 10 episodes you haven't seen.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And there's almost a sense of panic when you think about, like, I haven't even started the season. Oh, my God. I have so much catching up to do. I'm at that stage.
Yeah. Well, David Ramsey has pretty much been on every show.
Like I bought a tablet so I could watch these things.
Yeah. So Diggs been showing up. He was on Batwoman first, and then he popped over to Legends quick, but not as Dig. He was like Dig's ancestor, who is a real-life person. But I'm sure
he has an ancestor.
Yeah, but yeah, his character just had a terrible mustache, and it was really funny. And they were in the Old West.
That sounds right.
But yeah, Diggs he was just on The Flash, and then like he's going to be on Superman and Lois when it comes back. So I don't know.
I was originally geared in waiting to see him was on Superman and Lois. That was the part we were told about was. He's going to show up here. Don't worry.
Well, you remember we were talking about those, like how he said that he rejected the Green Lantern ring and there were consequences for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that kind of starts with Batwoman because he's just like in town to go to the doctor. And then we see more of that on The Flash. This last episode, it was just like, oh, those are consequences.
All right. See, now I'm actually getting excited again instead of daunted.
That was my hope.
Yeah, because that sounds fantastic. Like that there's an actual threaded storyline where it's, and I love Diggle. Fucking, even when Arrow at times, because, you know, Arrow would like be, it, just knock it out of the park for a few episodes. And there'd be like two or three episodes where you're just, not as into it.
Yeah.
But again, subjectively, it would be like, I'd be like, I don't know, man. I didn't like that episode as much. And look at TV time and it would just be. you know, a 1,000 comment thread of people are, this is the fucking best this show's ever been. You know, okay, cool, man. Glad it worked for you. Just not for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, Diggle was always one of those elements of the show that, like, he grew. He was fantastic. The actor's amazing. I was even glad to hear him, like, get behind the camera at some point. Like, I was deeply excited to hear after Arrow ended that he would still be some part of this universe.
Yeah.
So now I'm getting kind of pumped. Like,
yeah. And I'm excited because be cool. David Ramsey is also directing the Superman and Lois finale. So,
ooh.
Yeah. He's kind of pulling that's double a big duty chore now.
At this point, because Superman and Lois is getting great reviews and ratings.
It is really good, man.
Oh, that's the one I'm most caught up on because I sampled them and that was the one that really just drew me in. And yeah, I'm sadly more caught up on that than the others right now.
I mean, that no sadly about it. That's the one that's really deserving of it, honestly. Like, this last episode of The Flash was pretty decent and set up some really cool stuff. But before that, it was just sort of, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
We've been just kind of treading water, in my opinion. And, you know, I liked Chester last year, but now they've sort of made him into kind of a 90s nostalgic dump. Like, where he's just like, ha-ha, yay, I'm going to have all these, I'm going to wear the clothes from the 90s, and I'm going to mention every episode what I'm listening to from the 90s, and, yeah, okay, cool, y'all, okay, I got you. Nostalgia's in, 90s nostalgia, woo-woo. And other than, I'm not Cisco, and y'all don't like me as much, that's all he's got going for him at this point, so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to appreciate some of the 90s nostalgia for sure.
Yeah.
Look, it's just funny. I mean, it was our, you know, youth. It's worth a throwaway joke for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just a little much. It's a little too much of it at this point. But I'm a curmudgeon, and I've been informed on Twitter that I don't like fun. So, because I don't like Fast and Furious memes, I'm tired of the family memes.
I mean, look, that is on you.
I'm tired of them.
I know, but that it's on you to be tired of them as much as it is anything else. I know nothing about it. And honestly, some of them I almost have to puzzle through. Like, why is that? Oh, okay, cool. That's the family connection.
One of them I laughed at the other day, and I cannot remember it for the life of me. And I went, oh, I should mention how that one's pretty good.
The Home Alone one?
No, it wasn't that one. It wasn't that one. I don't remember what exactly it was, honestly. I did think of the Home Alone one when I thought about it. I was like, no, that one wasn't. I didn't laugh.
No, that wasn't the go. That's not the bitch.
It was a nice little twist on it, but no. Anyway, but yeah, I'm not nearly as angry about it as I think I come off as on Twitter. But the horse is pulp, y'all. The horse is pulp.
It is.
Over to Batwoman, though. Robin Givens has been cast on Batwoman in season 3. And her character is a powerful CEO for Jet Industries. Jada isn't bossy, she's the boss. Passionate and hardworking, a woman who has worked her way through life's ups and downs to climb her way to the top. All while being extremely protective over her impetuous son. A woman with a deep past that forced her to give up her firstborn child. Jada is a woman with a good heart, but will do whatever it takes to protect her family. I know you're not caught up. So all of us who are caught up, we know who her firstborn child is, though.
Okay. I don't care about the spoiler. I'm going to get caught up, and shortly, but I'll be all right.
But yeah, she was pretty good on Riverdale when she was on that show. So
I would ask you who on Riverdale, but that's been years, and
she was like the mayor.
Oh shit, I don't remember that.
I think
like literally, unless she was one of the major four, I wouldn't remember.
She was having sex with the police chief.
Like the major four and Luke Perry, and short of that, I don't remember anyone.
Yeah, you remember the gay kid, his police chief dad?
Nope.
Okay, fair enough.
Sorry, I'm telling you, we watched the entire series on one Saturday where Christian was like in pain.
Yeah.
And we just chilled on the couch the entire day.
And honestly, I don't even know if that happened in the first season, but yeah, she was sleeping with Kevin's dad, who was the police chief, who was one of the main bad guys on Dark Angel. Yeah. you can try to piece that together in your head. I don't know. Tuesday, July 27th, by the way, is when Batwoman Season 2 will be on HBO Max streaming. So there's that.
Yeah, that's good.
And final piece of news.
Mm-hmm.
Getting in under an hour today. Wow.
No, give us time.
No. No, this is the final piece of news, Jason. J.J. Abrams' next DC project is Madam X, which will tie into his rumored Justice League Dark project and follows Madam Xanadu. And running the series will be Angela Robinson. The last DC thing she worked on was Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, which was a biopic about William Moulton Marston, and who was the creator of Wonder Woman, and the relationships that he had with two key women in his life. And they were in a polyamorous relationship. So, which I could never do because I have enough birthdays to remember.
I like the energy.
But no, I
don't have to get up and go for that lifestyle. That was one of those we thought we were going to watch a long time ago. I mean, God, 4 years ago, maybe.
Was that?
Quite a documentary. It was a biopic or whatever. Yeah,
biopic.
A biopic, dear
God. Biopic sounds like you're scanning for cancer.
Yeah, it does. But isn't that what a biopic kind of does?
No. It points out every bad thing the person has ever possibly done.
Yeah. It's like a body scan.
Yeah.
Incidentally, the reason a lot of doctors tell you, like, don't get the full body scan. You don't need to know everything that's going on.
The Western narrative version of a morality scan.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and well, in all fairness, that's effectively what it ended up being for him and his compatriots there.
Mm-hmm. All right, so at this point, Johnny's going to be having anal sex with a hooker and snorting coke off of the small of her back. We're not even sure how he bent down that way. Did he get ribs removed? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. By the way, he's tenacious, though.
His son is a producer, so we're going to say it's real.
Mm-hmm. So I believe that's how it went down. We have a source, after all. I love the idea that sometimes when people say, we had sources. They're half-truthing it, where they're like, who'd you get that from? We have sources. And what they mean is we had drug dealers.
Yep. Got to keep that cocaine industry going.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it for us, man. How does it feel?
I don't know what to do with myself a little bit.
Hmm.
I mean, I'll figure something out.
I feel unburdened.
And also, it's been a short week as far as news. It's a fair amount of the news.
Short 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's true. A fair amount of the news has to do with stuff that's about to come out, and then we'll have way more to talk about at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like a heavy chain has been, detached from my scrotum or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. One of those taint chains. You remember those?
I've repressed it.
The matching taint chains we got when we lived together.
So no one could get to the milk unfairly and drink all of it?
Yeah, we were... Okay, until next time, keep some DC on your screen. Our intro music is by Jason Goss and Michael Shackelford. Michael's band, Galactic Engineers of Magnetic Sounds, or GEMS, can be found on SoundCloud and Bandcamp. Visit DCOnScreen.com to find our Patreon, merch, contact information, and every episode of the show for free, including crossovers we've done with other podcasts. DC OnScreen is a maladjusted production. For more from me and Jason, including sketch comedy, vlogs, parodies, and our improvised web series Hey Guy, visit maladjusted.dv.